Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Welcome back to Point of View with Phimelo Modini, and I'm her co-host this evening, Dr. Tlalemo Mofokeng. But also, I'm sure you could hear us somewhere there belting our sopranos and our mezzos. I have next to me the wonderful Dr. Sheldon Rocha Lea.
Yeah.
Who is a musicologist. You know, it's thinking like we are learned, a musicologist. And welcome.
Thank you.
Fascinated about why the track, why now, what's your vibe?
All right, so, I mean, August is Women's Month, mm-hmm. so for starters. All right, just to start. But tomorrow...
The only month we have, by
exactly.
the way.
Exactly. No, man, you guys have got every month. What are we talking about? Anyway, so that's number one. And number two, tomorrow is Whitney Houston's birthday. She would be 61 tomorrow. And so we thought, why do we not bring the voice to Kaya FM today? And so that's why we decided that we were going to do the whole Whitney Houston tribute.
And I can't think of a better legend to do this.
Salen, your relationship with Whitney Houston, can you remember?
I was raised by Whitney Houston. I think she's the one who made all of us believe we could sing.
Yes.
And but that's also one of my favorite Whitney Houston songs.
Yeah. It's my favorite.
Right?
Yeah. It's my
favorite. So love her.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, I love a lot of people. But I think her death as a celebrity and someone who's so distant but close in so many ways was one of the ones that really rocked me.
Yeah.
I think I've just got a cold heart.
Yeah.
But I'm hardly rocked and shaken by things. But Whitney today still remains an incredible loss. And to think she would have only been 61.
Yeah.
But from a fellow Leo, I mean, I can see why she was fire.
Are you a Leo as
well? Yes, it was my birthday on the 30th of July.
And it's my birthday on the 4th.
Well, do you see what the vibe
is?
This is what it is.
You see this party. So, I mean, there's a lot that you could have chosen from her.
There's a lot. But I decided that, with every show, it's about choosing songs that tell a story. Just to give a background on Whitney Houston, and I think the reason why she's such a significant figure, and not only for someone like you, but someone like myself, she was a voice of hope. And I think that is the significance of Whitney Houston, is that like for a little white boy listening to someone like that and thinking, I can also be great, you know, or someone elsewhere, just listening to that voice and going, I can also be great one day. And the reason why is because Whitney came at a time where even though the 1980s was seemingly this era of like integration and everyone was like happy and, you know, everyone was working together, black artists still couldn't get representation on radio. So for an artist like Whitney Houston to cut into a white market was a big thing.
Yeah. In fact, I was listening to an old interview she did with MTV where they were asking her, you know, tell us your first memories of MTV. And she said, well, I couldn't get in.
You don't blame my music. I remember that.
I couldn't get in. So that's my first memory of MTV.
And can I tell you, like, the thing that people don't like about Whitney Houston, some people don't like about Whitney Houston, is that she came across like very arrogant, which is a very typical
Leo. I mean, she's a Leo.
characteristic. But that is what also inspired me. It's like you don't need to make an excuse for yourself. Like I watched an interview with her where they were playing like I Will Always Love You, and then she's hitting that big note at the end and she turns to the camera and she says, if that ain't singing, I don't know what is. And I'm like, yes, girl, you need to own, people need to own their stuff. And I think we're often very apologetic about who we are, what we've achieved, what we do. And Whitney gave to me that thing where it's like, you need to own it. I can be proud of like things that I've achieved. But she also came from a family. She's got this immense pedigree. So not only did she become famous, she came from a famous mother. Her mother, Sissy Houston, was an iconic gospel singer. But on top of that, she was part of a band called the Sweet Inspirations, who were the backing vocalists for Elvis Presley. So she was very successful. And she was Whitney Houston was marinated in music legacy. So her godmother was Darlene Love. And Darlene Love was a famous backing vocalist, but she was very famous for a song called Christmas Baby Please Come Home. Mm-hmm. And so for the last few years, Darlene Love and Mariah Carey have been having this battle about who the queen of Christmas is.
And it starts in like late September, yeah, exactly. You know?
And so because Darlene Love was the first big artist to have a hit with a Christmas song, and that song was Christmas Baby Please Come Home. But and then on top of that, Bobby Brown, obviously, he was an iconic singer, and he helped shift the image of Whitney Houston. And then there was Dionne Warwick, who was her cousin, and Dee Dee Warwick, who's Dionne Warwick's sister, who is also a cousin. Now, the sad story is that there are allegations that Whitney and her brother, Gary, were sexually abused by Dee Dee Warwick, Warwick, and that the mother and a few of the other relatives were like, hush, 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 this didn't happen. Mm. And so there is a bit of a murky story there, but just one iconic name after the another. Aretha Franklin was her honorary aunt. Mm-hmm. You know, so she was immersed in this world of greatness. Mm-hmm. And that was the beauty of Whitney Houston. Now, that song, Greatest Love of All, is actually a cover version of a George Benson song from 1977 from a movie called The Greatest, which was a movie about Muhammad Ali. Mm. But that original version by George Benson just didn't go anywhere, which links up to our show from last week, which was about cover versions and how someone can take something and breathe new life into it.
I mean, look what she did with Dolly's song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't beat that. And you cannot match that voice.
No. And that was the beauty of Whitney. You know what? The Greatest Love of All was when I heard that song for the first time in 1985, I was 9 years old. And I was like, I want to be, that's what I want to do. I want to be a singer.
You want to be Whitney Houston.
I want to be Whitney Houston. And then when I heard this song, I was like, oh my goodness, this is just the most amazing thing. So this song was 1987, her second album. Mm. Whitney Houston only released 7 albums. 3 of the albums were named after her, which is so Leo.
Yes.
So she had an album called Just Whitney.
Whitney.
Her first album was Whitney. Her second album was Whitney Houston. Then she had an album called Just Whitney. So she,
and the greatest of Whitney Houston.
Now I get her, Seamus. I get my girl.
But this song was written by George Merrill and Shannon Rubicam. And they wrote How Will I Know? And when that song was hugely successful for Whitney, and they were like, please submit some more songs, you know, let's see where we go to. And they kept on submitting songs, and Clive Davis didn't like what he was hearing. Yeah. And eventually they wrote this and they submitted it. Now, the producer for the second album was Narada Michael Walden. And Narada was like, I don't like this song. It sounds like a rodeo song. Mm. And it sounds like something Olivia Newton-John would do. Like, I don't like it. Yeah. And so it took some convincing for him to actually release, he was like, let me have a look at and see what I can do with this. Mm-hmm. And that is what a producer does. The job of a producer is to take a unidimensional product and turn it into something. And so that's what Narada Michael Walden did. He turned it into this production that you hear today. So, yeah. And this is her biggest, this is one of her top 3 biggest singles. Yeah. It sold 14 million units.
Goodness. So you know how you always have this caller?
Yes,
that
yes,
says,
yes.
I'm Khotatso from Craig Hall.
Yes.
Well, Khotatso from Craig Hall is right here.
Right here.
In studio with us. Khotatso from Craig Hall, how are you? You don't look like a Khotatso from Craig Hall.
What does a Khotatso from Craig Hall look like?
You look like a yummy Khotatso from Craig Hall.
To that voice.
Well, but little did I know you guys are rioting. The energy is just through the roof.
I think there's more you want to tell people. We were a riot before we came in. and then somebody said, oh my gosh, is this an outsider?
Yeah.
Oh, he saw it all.
Absolutely. I mean, this is
welcome,
your Friday.
Welcome to our home.
Thank
welcome
you.
To our newish home.
Right.
And so your thoughts on Sheldon's selection today?
Sheldon's always on point. Like, I don't, first of all, I always listen while I'm in bed.
Yes.
And to be here is just a surreal experience. And he's just never gotten it wrong.
Yeah,
and I hate getting phone calls this time of the night, because this is when I listen to Sheldon and Pamela going through nice music.
You're thinking, stop it, I'm listening.
I'm like, don't call
stop
me.
It, I'm listening.
Why are people phoning you at 9 o'clock at night anyway?
No, no, no. It's Puza Thursday. They're asking, Baba, are you coming out? That's what they're asking.
But Sheldon just never gets it wrong. And Whitney, she reminds me of my late mom, so it's sad. But you know,
what's the story behind that? Was she her favorite?
Oh my gosh, the very first song you guys played, she used to just belt that song.
Wow.
We all did.
And I was like, yeah.
Yo, wow.
So yeah, The Voice. I'm thrilled
the
to be
voice.
Here.
So this is. Should we take a quick break before we get to the next song?
Let's do that. Banana bag.
Everyone has a Whitney story, right?
Yeah, everyone.
Chaleng and I were talking about my very. With my own money.
Mm-hmm.
My very own CD that I ever owned was a Whitney Houston one.
Which one?
It was a double one. The one with
blue.
The blue cover.
Yes.
And she's wearing white.
Yes.
Oh, so that's Whitney Houston.
And I didn't I didn't know how to play the CD.
When in doubt. When in doubt, it's got her name somewhere.
And I even got punished at
school. So we had a record player. I don't know. Does it know what a record player is?
CD player,
nonetheless.
I really would.
Nonetheless. So we had this gorgeous, gorgeous record player.
Yeah.
No, we had this gorgeous radio at this record player, whatever. And then the CD, somebody bought me the CD, or I bought myself, I don't remember. And then I thought you could play the CD
on the vinyl player.
And I had no idea. Why is this
goodness.
Thing not playing?
Or the stylist would have a very hard time picking up anything.
So cute.
Why?
But that's such a Pimelo thing.
Why?
Sorry.
Why is this thing not playing? So then I called you know, there's always the neighborhood's fundi.
Yeah, the technician.
Right. I wanna, the neighborhood DJ. The coolest.
What's LD? You saw.
Musicologies. And when I spoke to him, he's like, no, I mean, it should play. You know? And I said, no, it's not playing. He came to my house.
To see what was wrong with your vinyl player.
And then all he did was just shake his head.
You need another device
like,
for this.
Not this one.
No. CD player. And then, of course,
it's another animal.
He then showed me a CD player.
That's hilarious.
But I mean, that's how.
That's your story.
Story with you.
The exact same CD. I remember it was a double, man.
Yes.
I had a Croxley, I had a pen. And I was writing the lyrics, pause and start, pause.
Yes.
Which for me was an upgrade, right?
Yeah.
From the tape with the pen. You know,
when
you rewind it. So listen, I was full. I was it. And I was at Airport School for Girls and boarding school. Airport School for Girls, right? And I actually got gated. Because then instead of handing in my CD player on the Sunday evening, I kept it for the week. And what happens
because
when you
needed
to
transcribe all the songs.
The spirit and moves. I must have belted something and the headmistress, the bottom house mistress was like, cat! What is that? And then I was bust. And so I was gated until half term. And it's all Whitney's fault, but like,
but
so
we love Whitney for it. It was worth it.
Typical Whitney spirit, rebellious, fun, you know, all of the things. Yeah. So, anyway.
But this, I'm Your Baby Tonight, I remember when it came out, I was like so moved because it was a completely different sound to anything that had come before. So, what had happened with the first two albums, which were very Clive Davis directed albums, Clive Davis had a very specific vision for what he wanted Whitney Houston to be. He wanted her to be the diva. He wanted her to be this like balladeer singer.
The vision he had for Mariah.
Yeah, well, that was Tommy Mottola.
Same
thing, but with
Full
Whitney.
Yeah.
Now, the problem was that the black community were like, Whitney's
sister.
Too white.
And also the gospel thing, right?
Yes.
Like, I think that transition from being a gospel
singer
and transition
to be like an adult contemporary singer, because that's basically what she was. But the first two albums did so phenomenally well, like 25 million was the first one, the second one was 20 million. So she was hugely successful, but not in the black community. The black community were like, she's whitewashed the R&B sound. And so Whitney was like, I need to get a more authentic sound. And so the whole point behind I'm Your Baby Tonight was to shift that sound. Now, she had just met Bobby Brown the year before. Mm. And Bobby
Brown...
Can
you rewind to the year before that?
Oh, jeez, oh, yeah. Anyway. But that whole encounter made her think, I need to have a more authentic, like, urban sound. Mm. And so she approached L.A. Reid and Babyface, mm. and they produced this album and this specific song, and it shifted the whole Whitney. Like, from then mm-hmm. onwards, Whitney was always about tapping into the young R&B sound. The thing is that this album didn't work as well, although it was a number one album, it didn't work as well for her as the previous one. So this mm-hmm. one only sold like 10 million units. So it's half the sales
it's
of the
America.
Previous albums.
It's mm. America.
Yeah. So they weren't ready for R&B Whitney. You know,
America is white.
They wanted white Whitney Houston. Yeah.
So I don't think anybody believes us when we say time in radio goes by so quickly. Nobody believes us. And you won't believe it, but Laleng, it's almost time.
I can't believe
we're
it.
Almost done. We're almost done.
And
your thoughts on today's show?
Absolutely exquisite. Are these my final words?
Oh, okay. No, don't feel like that. I mean, the minute you start thinking yeah, like that, then you're like, no, we're done.
No, I've got something that I want to share with you.
We had a few things that we spoke about earlier. Mm-hmm. Sheldon and Khotazo, we had a few things we spoke about. We spoke to the ANC earlier on. Mm-hmm. This is their moment of reckoning.
Right.
So another moment of reckoning.
They call it the moment of reckoning, so to speak. Your thoughts on that?
Look, I'm underwhelmed, and I am unreasonably optimistic for South Africa. Mm. I mean, I fly a lot to a lot of places, and when I come back and that aeroplane is descending and you see that Highveld sunset, it never gets old, the feeling of coming home. So we have to fight for this country with everything that we have, because firstly, it's the only place we have that we can call home. Mm. But secondly, oh my God. God, are we amazing as people. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, that's what still keeps me unreasonably optimistic, despite what many of us can account, you know, as failures of leadership and governance. But despite that, for me, it's the people. And I think we can do a lot more by being active in politics and being active in the daily lives of other South Africans.
And then I think this bigger story, and we could have had more time, but this is radio and it's not always possible. Mm. We went to Israel. And that conversation, I think, needed more time. That conversation, in fact, needed, I don't even know if you'll ever feel like you have enough time for a conversation like that.
And for me, because I've been working on this issue so intensely from literally the 8th of August, but I'm absolutely emotionally and mentally and intellectually exhausted. And I'm oscillating between absolute rebellion and being like, justice will come, but the impatience of witnessing a genocide in real time and feeling so let down by the world leaders that we have. And I think the cowardness of this quiet diplomacy is there was never a place for quiet diplomacy in any case, but in this moment in time, when every single multilateral system fails to prevent a genocide, what is the point then even? And so that what moves me every day, the closer I can get to ensuring that everyone's right to health everywhere is realized.
So it's a difficult one. So we had a conversation, and I want to bring you in, Sheldon and Khotazo, because we toyed with, it's a Friday, you know, so my producer Tando says, my gosh, it's heavy. It's a Friday. Mm-hmm. I usually have these conversations, and I must say, I think I give my producers a hard time about staying on Gaza, because it's, you know, you've got to understand that people in the newsrooms have a habit of moving on. The story is new, the story breaks, and the story moves, right? Mm. We've been at the story for about a year now. Almost, right? Almost a year. Mm. Almost
there.
That's right.
And it's exhausting. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It's not moving. Mm. It's just the same old con. It's just the same thing. And it's quite emotionally draining in many ways. Mm-hmm. And it's not often that people stay on a story for that long and stay with the story. Mm. I have deliberately stayed on the story. And I know my producers sometimes look the other way when I say we've got to go back. And I know others just pretend like they didn't hear me and then want to forget about it for a week and so on. But it's exactly that. We have to stay on the story. And it's interesting to always find an angle. When this guest spoke to us, who is an Israeli Jew, who lives in Israel, and who says people in Israel don't know what's happening across the fence. For me, such a shocking thing to hear.
Yeah.
And it's so similar to what white South Africans were saying in South Africa in the 80s, saying, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. And even in the Second World War.
I didn't know.
But why did you think it was normal to be the only person free anyway?
I didn't know.
I think the media is quite powerful.
Yeah. I didn't know.
But I think that's propaganda, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's how Adolf Hitler got
so
the Second World War.
It's hard to hear that. It's hard because we just can't believe it. You just cannot believe that with every social media platform that we have and everything that we have, there is a part of the world that is in absolute denial about the atrocities just across the fence.
Yeah.
It cannot be true. Mm. But the thing about it is that it's another side of the story we have to tell.
Mm.
We have to reckon with the fact that there are people in this world who are watching genocide, who are sipping cappuccino.
Mm.
And that was that. Mm-hmm. And then we had to sober up. And then bring ourselves back to life again, because that's the thing, you know, the light and shade. And then we obviously then went into a much more lighter conversation. And, you know, we paid tribute to Connie Chume, and we then have to do this. We have to have music. Mm. We have to laugh. We have to, you know, lighten up, because that's life.
It's
is
part
it
of
not?
The resistance, right. Pimelo.
It's
you know,
life.
Fighting for joy, even in this moment, it is part of resistance.
Yeah.
And I just want to read something really quick that... I really love from Shay Kovara, but also Bell Hooks. And Shay says that the true revolutionary is guided by a great feeling of love. It is impossible to think of a genuine revolution lacking this quality. And I think for me, that's one thing that has carried me through in doing the work. It's this absolute commitment to how revolutionary love is.
It keeps you going, but why do you do it? Why do you do it, Laling? Because many think that, you know, it's glorious. You must be earning lots of money. You're going to these amazing cities. Let me tell people something quickly. I've done the kind of work you do. And I can tell you now, you arrive in New York City, you don't even see the city. Mm-hmm. Because you're inside, locked up, trying to get through. You don't sleep. You're up all night. You are reading. You are talking. You are convincing each other. You're debating. You're up again. And the cycle continues. You don't even see the New York City. Yeah. You don't see Geneva. You don't. You and then you're into a plane back again to South Africa. And people think you're just traveling around the whole time. That's not quite it. And you still don't get paid.
Yeah. The UN work that I do is because I have a commitment to human rights. And I think that's what's insatiable about it. Is that, you know, I get to be proximal to that institution, but also keep my independent voice and bring that lived experience and that intersectional life that I'm black woman, I'm not one or the other. I'm both at the same time all the time.
Mm.
And there's a particular way in which power interacts with me and power moves through me every single day. And it's that knowledge that keeps me going, because this is actually for me. I'm fighting for Tlaleng when I walk to Gwagwa. And that's why I keep saying that, because that 8-year-old, my core memory is running away from Ninyala in Putadichaba, in the gravel roads.
Sure.
All right? That's where I go when you say childhood memory.
Mm.
And I know that Tlaleng at 8 years old deserved better than that.
Mm.
I deserve better than being the one who's told, get on that stool, switch on the television, something is happening, and being met with the scenes of Chris Hani lying bloody on the floor, right? So it's that knowledge. It's deep inside. It's visceral for me. I don't have to study to know what justice is and to know what it is to live under the crushing weight of imperialism and colonialism. And that's why if Gaza wins, we all win.
Yeah.
Because it means the system, the empire, would have fallen and all of us will be free.
Well, so the idea is obviously to give more platform, more a voice, more to come alive on this platform. This is how I want to share my space. So we'll be doing this every Thursday. Thank you, Tlaleng, for being our very first. Really appreciate
it.
Your presence was just so joyful, so amazing, so clever, so impactful. Thank you so much for being here. And Khotatso, thanks for visiting.
Thanks for having me.
We really love seeing the people that we hear on the radio all the time. Appreciate your commitment to the show. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sheldon, what can I say? How do I begin to thank thee? How?
Well, let me just say that the only reason why I got into music was to bring joy to people.
Yeah.
And so to see how people, you know, how the just everyone here was so like uplifted by the music. Mm-hmm. That is the joy of music. Mm-hmm. That is what moves people through this world.
Yeah.
And that is the power of music. And that's the power of Whitney.
So how do you wrap it up?
So we're going to end off with a song called Higher Love, which was a rehash. The song was supposed to be on the 1990 album I'm Your Baby Tonight. Didn't make it. Mm-hmm. Because often when artists record, they will record more songs than what they actually need for the album. And this was one of the outtakes.
Mm.
Anyway, in 2019, Kygo, a Norwegian producer and DJ, decided he wanted to revive the song. So took the old Whitney Houston vocal and added his own flavor to it. And it became her first hit since Million Dollar Bill in 2012. And this is it. Higher Love.
That's how we wrap it up. Thanks, everybody. Beautiful. I'll be back on at 8 o'clock on Monday.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.